Hello and welcome to this episode of the Future of Work podcast, where we discuss the changes and challenges facing the world of work. I am Martin Murphy. We have with us today a very special guest, the ILO's Director General, Gilbert Humbaud. DG, welcome to the Future of Work podcast. A pleasure to have you with us. We have a lot of things to talk about during this podcast. As we know, the International Labour Conference opens on the 3rd of June here in Geneva, and the ILC is often compared to the International Parliament of Work. And it's set to take place at a time when the world of work and the global economy are once again facing many, many challenges. Now, we will discuss the conference more in detail later on, but first, I would like to look at the current situation of employment around the world. The ILO's latest update of the World Social Unemployment Outlook estimates that the global unemployment rate in 2024 will be 4.9%. This is a decline from the 5% rate recorded in 2023, and it's also a more positive outlook than the previous ILO projection for global unemployment in 2024, which was set at 5.2%. DG, what is your reaction to what appears to be some positive news?
First of all, thank you for receiving me today. In fact, I'm not surprised. What we see happening is that globally, there is a recovery since COVID. We mentioned that back at the earlier stage in the year, in January, that the world is recovering in terms of the labor market. Yes, our estimate back then was about 5.2% the global unemployment rate, which now clearly is down to 4.9. So it somehow, let's put it this way, it's good news that, you know, we have less and less unemployed people. However, when you start unpacking those global statistics, that's where it could be a bit troublesome. First of all, we know that although the global unemployment, you know, in the last year and a half, 2 years or so, ILO has been measuring what we call the job gaps. And that which include, in addition to people registered as unemployed, include also people that have given up looking for jobs. And that's still, we talk about 402 million, which is quite huge. We're also talking about the gap, the inequality, increasing inequality between men and women, and inequality between the region deepening. So in quantity, maybe things are kind of quote-unquote good news. But when you start looking at the quality, it's really troublesome.
Now, some of the issues that you mentioned just now will be discussed at the International Labour Conference. You know, we call it the World Parliament of Labour. And of course, we have a very, very full agenda. One of the things which is different in this International Labour Conference is that the Global Coalition for Social Justice will hold its first forum on the 13th of June. Can you tell us a little bit more about the coalition, where it's at, what the purpose of it is, and also why is it a coalition that includes not only traditional ILO stakeholders, but also non-traditional stakeholders?
First of all, I mean, since the decision made by our governing body, the GB, in November to officially create that a coalition, I have been quite very humbled about the responsiveness of our, first of all, our constituent, as you mentioned, but also the non-traditional ILO constituent. And now we're talking about more than 60, close to, I think, 63, 64 member states have officially confirmed their participation and their partnership, and we expect additional member states during the conference to really be forthcoming globally, including the workers' organization, employers' organization. We have about 15 or so UN agencies, regional financial institutions. We have NGOs, international NGOs. We have WTO from the economic world, the Oxfam of this world, so, and the academic. It's really widespread. What does that tell us? It tells us that when we talk about social justice, the whole world is at stake, and people really understand that. Of course, it's also, you know, we talk about labor is not a commodity. So we do believe, I do believe that the beginning of social justice is to have a dignified work, a dignified job, a decent job on that. But it also means that equal access to education, equal access to health, to basic health and so forth. So you could imagine, or equal access to economic opportunities. So this is why it goes beyond the traditional ILO constituent. Very quickly, where we stand now, we had last week the first meeting of we set up this kind of coordinating group, and we had its first meeting last week, which was quite very productive. We will expect between now and the end of the year, finalizing, fine-tuning the specific thematics where we really want to zero in as the first batch, and again having a work plan that we'll start implementing in 2025.
One of the issues that underpins social justice is, of course, what here at the ILO we call the fundamental principles and rights at work. The International Labour Conference is having a discussion on this issue. And of course, this links back to the 1998 Declaration on Fundamental Principles and Rights of Work. How can the ILO ensure that these fundamental principles and rights at work are up to date in a changing world of work, where you have issues like remote work and digital platforms, growing demographics, climate change?
Of course, we are in a world today where everything is moving at a very, very fast pace. I mean, in addition to what you mentioned, you also have to add the artificial intelligence, particularly the Gen AI. All of that brings us to make sure that we in ILO, we are also up to date. This is why we have this recurrent discussion, to have this opportunity. That's where the expression you use at the beginning of being the parliament of labor comes to play. So for all our constituents to be able to exchange, to dialogue, to debate, to agree, to disagree, so we can really come to a way forward in responding to the new challenges that we are facing. So we are expecting a very, very big discussion. And we think that for us in ILO, out of that, it will also give us some guidance, and particularly at the time where we are working on our strategic plan for the next 4 years.
The ILC will also hold a first standard-setting discussion on protection against biological hazards. Why do we need a new international standard? And we don't know what that international standard will be, right? But why do we need a new international standard on biological hazards at work in particular?
You see, it's important to keep in mind that we know that we have a lot of sometimes criticism, okay, that there are too many or too much standards, and the world that we don't need more standards, etc. And ILO, the organization and the office, we have been very mindful listening to those criticism. This is why a few years back, the governing body has set up this tripartite working group to review all the standard and see if what need to be updated or what need to be parked, and etc. And you know, ironically, one of the recommendations we got from this working group is also to address that missing challenges we have. And it became very clear that there was a gap, a missing gap, when you talk about the biological hazard on that. So, and again, obviously, after COVID, everybody understood those gaps are serious ones. So it's in response to this request by the working group that has been reviewing it. So it's going to be a double discussion. We're going to have the first discussion this year, which will continue next year, 2025. And by then, we will see what type of instrument is could be best fit to address. The most important, from what I see, is to ensure that we all agree on those gaps that have been identified, and ensure that the final recommendation, the final resolution, respond to that shortcoming.
The ILC, of course, does many things. It has different committees. One of them is the Committee on the Application of Standards. We're not going to talk about that. It's a different thing. But there is another very interesting general discussion that's taking place, which is on decent work and the care economy. Why does the ILO need to turn its attention to this issue? Why is better protection of care economy workers who are predominantly women and migrants needed?
Of course, you know, there's a lot of issues and opportunities around the whole care economy. And when you talk about care economy, you talk about domestic workers. And when you talk about domestic workers, we talk about gender, because predominantly is close to 70-75% are women. You talk about salary pay gap between women and men. You talk about migration. You talk about aging population. You talk about secular labor migration. So it's a whole set of issues, economic and social dimension, which are linked to the care economy. And quite frankly, the more that we in the whole global world, the more we live, the longer we live, the more are we going to be in need of this care economy. So it's important for us to have this general discussion, and again, to ensure that we, moving forward, our work is really adjusted accordingly to the finding and the recommendation coming out of that discussion.
And finally, the ILC is also discussing your report on the situation of workers in the occupied Arab territories. This report, as all the reports of the ILC, can be found in the ILC website. But what is your reaction to this report?
Listen, it's quite a very terrible situation we're facing in Gaza right now. We do know that all of that started on October 7 with the attack of Hamas against Israel. But, you know, we talked today about more than 35,000 people losing their life. You know, and again, recently we know that this bombing that with 45 deaths in a refugee camp, innocent children, women, old people, and men losing their life. It got to stop. We really need to have this stopped and really start talking about two-state solution. The world of work is obviously affected, and this is what our finding with the unemployment rate in Gaza doubling, essentially from 25%, which was already difficult, 25% unemployment rate before October 7, and now we talk about 45-46% unemployment rate, which almost one person out of two, is unbearable. And we just cannot, the world cannot continue on living with that. So something decisive has to happen. And so I'm really again calling for a stop of the war and the negotiation for a two-state solution.
DG, thank you very much for your time. We know it's very busy times for you and everyone here at the ILO. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Just a final reminder that there's a lot more information on the different things that the DG has been talking about. You can find it on social media. You can follow us at International Labour Organization on LinkedIn, ILO.org on Facebook and Instagram, and at ILO on X. Thank you very much for everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode. Goodbye.